Okay, this hour we will take your phone calls with David Darling. We are not alone, and that'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. I may have the hot off the presses book, We Are Not Alone, David, huh?
I think you might do, yeah. Proof of extraterrestrial life. Can't get any hotter than that.
No, not at all. Amazon.com, I guess, they have it?
That's right. And as they say, all good bookshops, so, yeah.
You had fun doing this one, didn't you?
I really did. This is one of my funnest books. I thought, yeah, we're really putting ourselves on the line here. My co-author and myself, and this was a blast. Nothing I like better than hunting aliens and then writing about it.
Well, you're good. And my buddy Seth Shostak here wrote a little bit for you in the book, too. And
oh,
Seth,
yeah, he gave us a nice little write-up there, yeah.
He's, you know, he is, as much as one wants to try to decide whether SETI's going in the right direction or not, he makes searching for extraterrestrial life fun, doesn't he?
He's the exact guy you need. I mean, you need a huge optimist to carry that program forward, and he's a fantastic spokesman for that whole program, and I wish him the best, yeah.
Absolutely. Let's go to the phones. We'll go to Strongville, Ohio first on the wild card line. Michael, take it away, Mike.
Good evening, George and David.
Hi.
Just a simple question. Is there any chance that consciousness is just a byproduct of vibration, the way that we think that gravity is just a byproduct of motion?
It depends what you mean by vibration, I guess. Vibration is a very common concept in physics. I happen to believe, personally, if you're asking me what consciousness is, that it is something different than the material brain. I mean, the conventional view of science is that consciousness is something created by the brain, okay? Whether you want to call that a vibration or not, I don't know. What I believe is that consciousness is already out there, that it's not something that is created by the brain, but it is something filtered by the brain. Now, what form that consciousness actually takes, whether it's something like a field in the form of a gravitational field, or whether it's a vibration, I don't know what the nature of consciousness is, whether it's physical or whether it's something different than matter and energy. I just simply think that it is out there rather than being something that is formed within ourselves. I hope that answers your question, because I don't know whether it's a vibration or not. I don't know what the ultimate nature of it is.
David, the multiverse theory seems to be more and more prevalent now than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, very much so. That's absolutely true. It seems to have just sort of seeped into mainstream science. You talk about that 20 or 30 years ago, and people would have thought you were crazy, you know, or at least being uneconomical. I mean, how could you possibly have so many universes out there? It just seems like we've got the one. Now it's just absolute mainstream. It's almost a prediction of our mainstream theories that there are this almost infinitude of universes. So, yeah, it's not science fiction anymore. That is what scientists would, they'd be surprised if there wasn't a multiverse these days.
Isn't that mind-boggling? Even
it
to
blows
a,
your
to
mind.
Think that?
Yeah, it's like the universe keeps getting, or not the universe, but reality keeps getting bigger and bigger. I mean, to begin with, people thought there was just the Earth and these little things going around it, and all of a sudden the Earth's going around the sun, and all of a sudden the sun is just one of many stars. Then the galaxy is one of many galaxies. Now we're a universe among many universes. Just wonder where the whole thing ends.
We'll go to New York next. Julio, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
It was a few years ago, for some reason, I really got interested in the moon Europa.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, I believe it was about a year ago, maybe two, on the NASA site, they had some diagrams and pictures showing different probes going to the moon, showing different ways of accessing the ocean different ways. Is that still in a process, something that they're working on doing?
I think most of those missions that you saw outlined then, and some of them were landers and some of them were orbiters, most of those were wishful thinking and have now kind of gone out of the window. And what they're talking about at the moment is a combined NASA European mission, which would take in I'm trying to remember the name of it. I think it's called the Europa Jupiter System Mission, which is a real mouthful. But it's competing. It's competing with another outer solar system mission, which is called the Titan-Saturn system mission. So that's directed more at the moons of Saturn than the moons of Jupiter. But at the moment, it's the Europa-Jupiter system mission, which is kind of a multi-probe mission, which I think would include a lander probe on Europa, which we really need to do. We really need to get something down the surface to sample the substances that are actually on the surface of Europa. That is the only mission at the moment that I know has funding, at least for the planning stages, and that is likely to carry on into the future. But you know, I don't know what the launch date for that is, but it would.
It's 2020.
2020. Okay.
2020. David.
All right. Well, so we're 10 years in the future. So that's the only one that's on the drawing board at the moment. All those are the ones you saw a few years ago. Some of those concepts may have been wrapped up into this new one, but most of those have kind of died the death over through various funding issues.
My God, David, 2020 seems so long ago. A long time ago.
Now I know it's a long time to wait, isn't it?
Oh my gosh! Now it seems, but it's going to come up faster than you know it.
Well, yeah, that's the way it goes. I mean, I can't believe it's 3.5 years since I was on the show last, you know. I just think, this is all, life's going past so quickly.
And we continue to get more and more responses for you. It was just like you were just on.
I know. Isn't that
weird?
Scary?
It is. You know, I happen to believe, by the way, in the abiotic oil theory, and that is that this planet makes its own oil, just the way it was formed. I don't believe in fossil fuels and plankton have created all this oil.
Okay.
By looking at Titan and its methane lakes in the hydrocarbon out there, does that back up that abiotic theory here?
You know what, George? I don't like to talk about things I don't know too much about.
Okay.
I guess it means that it is easy to create hydrocarbons in a natural environment. I mean, yes, that those hydrocarbon lakes on Titan are not produced by life, that's for sure. They're drizzling out of the atmosphere. Whether there's life in those lakes or not is another matter, but they are being created naturally. So that's the best answer I can give you on that one.
They're not dead dinosaurs up there in Titan.
Exactly. No. I doubt it.
Let's go now to Dale, Columbus, Ohio, first-time caller. Hi, Dale.
Hi, George. Hi, David.
Hi.
It's a great topic tonight.
Thanks.
Hey, my first question was, if we're going to these other worlds and other planets, would we be considered the Greys or the humanoids or the reptilians?
Well, that's a good question. I guess it depends how you define those things. I mean, I suppose we would class ourselves as humanoids, wouldn't we?
I don't know, because the devices that these beings might see, if they are there, would be gray and silver and aluminum and.
Oh, you mean our technology? They'd look at our.
Right. Well, the same thing that's happening to us now.
Okay. Well, that's entirely possible, I guess. I guess it depends where you went. I mean, if you went to another star system, you know, because probably there isn't life, you know, intelligent life elsewhere in the solar system, indigenous life. In other words, we're not likely to go to Mars or Europa or bump into intelligent beings. But if we went to another star system and we found intelligent life out there, I guess it depends. It depends how common these things are. First of all, it depends whether you believe in Greys and these other things or not. That's still speculative, isn't it? That's on the margins. That's way beyond the margins of science, really. So how would they classify us? I don't know. I think they would look at us, and if there are humans out there, they would probably classify us as humanoids. Although if they saw us in our spacesuits, maybe they would take that for being our exoskeleton or something. I don't know the answer to that. I would class us as humanoid.
Well, and my second question was, don't you believe that the human mind is set or wired to believe that what we see is real?
Explain.
Well, people see ghosts. People see aliens. People see spaceships. Is that something that's pre-programmed into us, or is that something that we simply manifest through the media and books?
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I don't think it's pre-wired because I haven't seen any of those things. I have to be honest with you. I've seen lights in the sky occasionally that I can't explain, but I don't jump immediately to the you know, supposition that they're alien spacecraft. That would be the last thing. That doesn't mean I don't believe in those things. It just means that as a scientist, I always look for a mundane explanation first and then eliminate that before I go on to, you know, wilder theories. I've never seen a ghost. So if it was pre-wired into the brain, then presumably everybody would be seeing these things and more or less all the time, and that doesn't happen. So I think that if these things are real, then they are part of external reality rather than being something that is, formed within the brain. Although, of course, people do hallucinate as well, but that's a different thing than what you're talking about.
Okay, next up, we'll go to Joan in San Diego, west of the Rockies. I was just there. Hi, Joan.
Oh, that's right. You were. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
I could talk to you hours on what I needed to, but I'm going to try to make it as quick as possible. I had a near-death experience about 10 years ago, and all these strange things. Oh, and as I was coming out from being under, something whispered in my right ear, "You have to go back and heal families." Mm-hmm. I just died, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to heal families. By the way, my father was a scientist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at home with all this. I started this automatic writing. I came up with a way for children to read that is totally unbelievable. Now, remember, well, let me just say, I found that I was a walk-in. I watched sightings, and Ruth Montgomery was on. And I said, wait a minute, that sounds like me. So I started doing more research about walk-ins, and then automatic writing began. I brought my work to Barnes & Noble, How to Read, A Different Way for Children to Read, and the place. That's a half-hour story right there. But the
well, let's get a question out of
here. They went ballistic, and I've written also a screenplay with 22 songs, and it's animated, so I've got 34 products. And then I heard a lot about Palladians, and about a week ago, somebody said that there may be two more planets, but in the solar system.
Now, let me ask you that, David. There has been talk of other planets in the solar system that we just haven't found them yet. What do you think?
Well, we know there are undiscovered objects in the solar system. We're finding things further out from the sun than Pluto all the time. We're finding objects that are as big or bigger than the largest asteroids in the solar system. It's entirely possible that there are undiscovered worlds out there that are, they could be even as big as the Earth. There could be objects out there. They'd be quite distant. They would be not obvious, obviously, because they haven't been discovered yet. But there are many worlds waiting to be discovered out there in what's called the Kuiper Belt and the Oort cloud that we don't know about. There could be millions of these objects, not just one or two. But if you're talking about planets of a substantial size, yes, there's the possibility. There's no scientific evidence for them whatsoever at the moment. The sort of things you hear about tend to be more on a level of it's predicted by such and such an ancient calendar or whatever. You know, it's more sort of subtle knowledge than scientific knowledge. There's nothing on the scientific horizon that says there's big planets out there, but there's nothing that says there can't be.
The work of Zechariah Sitchin, of course, talks about his interpretation of Sumerian texts,
yeah,
of which there's another planet in the solar system that is on a 3,600-year elliptical orbit, comes close by the planet every 3,600 years, and he talks about how perhaps visitors from that planet came here to genetically alter us because they were trying to mine for gold or something to sprinkle it in their atmosphere for some reason. But he also talked about how these tablets talked about how in the early stages of the solar system, a planet collided with Earth. And it is uncanny because I think science talks about collisions like that, don't they?
Well, we know that something collided with the Earth because that's how the moon was formed.
Chipped us off. Right?
Yeah, it chipped us off. So something about the size of Mars collided with us. But that's a long time ago. We're talking 4 billion years ago. That's before we think there was life on the Earth. That's
right.
That's not within sort of history or even prehistory. This is going back, you know, to the early days of the solar system. Yes, collisions happen all the time. Asteroids smash into us. That's what killed off the dinosaurs. We know that other worlds have been hit. They happen not regularly nowadays, but they do still happen. But I don't know much about Sitchin's work, to be quite honest. I have to be frank with you about some of these things, George. I'm not a knowledgeable. That doesn't mean I dismiss it. I mean, I can't dismiss something I don't know anything about. But I do know that if a planet moved through the solar system, it would cause gravitational disturbances, which you would expect to see. And you would expect the planets to be disturbed by a passage of another planet through it. That's not exactly what we see. So I would question the veracity of that, but leave it as an open question, I guess.
What happened to this planet that may have collided with us? Where did it go?
We don't know. We don't know. Maybe it got blown to pieces. Maybe it's one of the objects that are circling further out in the solar system today. Maybe it passed entirely into the outer parts of the solar system. There's simply no answer to that at the moment.
In the asteroid belt, a planet that blew up or just a planet that never formed?
Probably a planet that never formed, actually, because of the gravitational influence of Jupiter, which is very powerful. It didn't allow a planet to consolidate in that orbit. So, yeah, it's probably not a planet that blew apart. It's one that never actually formed.
Let's get a question from John in Chicago. Go ahead, John. You're up with us.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good, John.
Hey, good.
Yeah, how you doing, fellas? Okay, I got one question, or two questions to ask. Okay, the Viking probes on Mars, are they still working? And one day, if man should go to Mars, would he bring them back?
No, they're not still working. They worked for a couple of years, so their activity ceased in the late 1970s, so they've been inactive for about 30 years. They'd make a great museum piece, wouldn't they?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I think that they're not going to be brought back right away because that's a heavy load to bring back. They're going to be more interested in bringing rocks back to begin with to see if there's life in those rocks. But in the future, I would be inclined to think that maybe they'd bring one of them back to put it in the National Aerospace Museum and they'd leave one there in situ. That's what I would tend to do because there's two of them identical. So I'd bring one back, put it in the museum for everybody to see, and I'd leave the other one in a plastic bubble as a permanent memento on Mars.
You know, if life ended on this planet and maybe a million years from now, these outer planets are visited by beings who came into our solar system, they would see, for example, the moon landers. They would see the Viking probes. They would see Spirit and Opportunity on Mars and probably wonder, my gosh, where did they come from?
Exactly. Exactly. They would, and it wouldn't be immediately obvious. I suppose eventually when they started doing archaeological digging on the Earth, they'd realize there'd been a civilization here, and they'd probably trace it to the place of origin. But it would be an interesting story to try to reconstruct a million years from now what had actually been going on.
David, we'll come back and take final phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Greg Hunter joins us from USAWatchdog.com as we talk about the healthcare plan and what it means to you. Interesting story in from Webmaster Lex. I'll read a little bit of it. Neptune may have polished off a super-sized Earth that once roamed the outer solar system and stolen its moon to boot. The brutal deed could explain mysterious heat radiating from the icy planet and the odd orbit of its moon Triton. And there's also now a theory that perhaps Neptune was formed closer in and then made its way out. Fascinating. We'll be back with final calls with astronomer David Darling and astrobiologist David Darling on Coast to Coast AM. What do you think about contact anytime soon, David?
I think it could happen anytime. Again, it gets back to, are we being watched, and do the creatures who are watching us feel the need to warn us or give us some information that would be beneficial to us in the near future? I think that could be a trigger for contact. So I wouldn't be surprised if we make contact tomorrow or in the next 100 years. It's kind of unpredictable.
Should we tell them where we are?
I think we've already told them. I think just by our activities on Earth, we've already told them whether we send out messages or not. They know we're here.
Okay, let's go back to the calls. Jonathan in Houston, you're up with David Darling. Jonathan, go for it.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Okay, John.
I had a question. What do you think is the reason for the technological jump just within the past 100 years? As far as throughout the history of humanity,
and it is so it is dramatic, David.
Yeah,
because great grandmother was born in 1898. She died in 2001, and just what she saw in her life was more than, you know, the entire history.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, it's accelerating too. If you look at what's happening today, with say, for example, with computers, personal computers, the internet. Nobody can predict, you know, from year to year what's going to happen next. So the rate of progress is actually accelerating as time goes on. You know, we had the Industrial Revolution, and then we had automation, we had mechanical device, steam engine leading to the internal combustion engine and so forth. You know, and then we got the chip in the integrated circuit in the 50s and 60s, and things have just been accelerating. Whether there's something unusual happening there, or that's just the way technology normally develops in a sort of accelerated mode, I don't know. I think it may be as a normal progression once you get beyond a certain threshold, things tend to move faster and faster, and we may be caught up in that sort of exponential growth at present.
You know, David, his grandmother lived to 103, and she lived through 3 centuries.
Isn't that wild? How many people could claim that? That is just extraordinary, isn't
three,
it?
It makes her sound like she was 300. She was 103.
Exactly.
But she made it.
Exactly. I mean, just to say that you lived in the 19th century, I mean, what an incredible thing.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Let's go to Grace in Tucson, Arizona. You're up with us. Hi, Grace.
Thank you. You're an astrophysicist and an astrobiologist. Is that correct?
Well, you know, my training was in astronomy. I did my PhD in to do with stars and how stars evolved. And as a writer, which I've been for most of my professional life, I have written extensively about life in space. So I suppose you could call me an astrobiologist, yeah.
So you are interested in life. So I'm sure you've had just the normal human curiosity, and you, every once in a while, you've checked out the fringes of your science. And, you know, the buzz everybody's talking about, if there's civilizations out there, how they are getting here. I don't think that they are traveling here. I think they teleport themselves. I really think they rearrange their molecules, and maybe when they get here, they have it all by design so that they'll have a vehicle when they get here. You know, they rearrange their molecules. It's just teleportation. I don't think it has to do with anything with traveling for years and years.
Yeah.
But you mentioned something about civilizations possibly watching us and maybe not even intervening unless we're in dire crisis. But we're in dire crisis now. You know, I mean, we have diseases we haven't been able to find the key to conquer. We have third world countries dying of starvation and contaminated water. And I can't see any kind of civilization out there that actually travels here. And people have actually had contact with them. I can't see the perverse pleasure of any civilization out there not stepping in and doing something to help us. I'm sure they have the methods to treat these diseases, which for them are probably so fundamental and basic. What are your thoughts about that? I mean, and we're also engaged in wars, which are needless wars, and we're killing each other. I mean, I think that's crisis. I don't understand why a civilization would come out here and actually sometimes abduct our people. And I mean, Coast to Coast has had a lot of interviews with scientists who talk about abductions and about finding pieces of metal in people's bodies. I mean, all you have to do is mention the person, Linda Moulton Howe, and I mean, there's a whole cavalcade of information about animals being
She's
dissected.
On Thursday.
Yeah.
Well, let's get this take. David, first of all, you know, all these horrible diseases could be a way of this planet, and I believe in the Gaia theory, where I think Earth is a living organism by itself. This planet could be culling itself out. I mean, that may be a way it reduces population in its own way.
Well, I believe the overall Gaia hypothesis as well. I think to get to the caller's point about whether a civilization that was watching us and could intervene and could do something about it, why don't they? There could be several reasons for that. There could be, I get back to, I know it's a very simple-minded way of looking at it, but a kind of prime directive where you don't actually get involved. You remember in all those Star Trek episodes, things would happen and there'd be all this controversy about should we intervene and do something? No, you've got to let this race develop on its own. They learn from their mistakes. If you are constantly intervening, it's like you're constantly correcting a child who, you know, should learn from getting things wrong because that makes them stronger in the end. Yep. The question is, how severe does the catastrophe have to be before you step in and say, hey, look, if you carry along this path, you're actually going to destroy your entire civilization? Or how long do you let it carry on as a sort of a learning experience? And, you know, who knows? We're building speculation on speculation here. We're assuming, first of all, that we are being watched. I think there's every possibility we are. And then why don't they intervene? Well, if you believe in God, why doesn't God intervene? You know, the same question arises there as well. So I would suspect that it's a question of judgment. If somebody's watching us, they say, well, are they going to blow themselves up this minute? Are they on a terminal decline with their environment where unless we intervene now, they will be extinct within 100 years? Or is this a crisis we let run? And from that, they will emerge from it stronger at the other end. That's the only possible answer I can give to you on that one.
There you go, Grace. Next up, we go to Vincent in Anchorage, Alaska, west of the Rockies. Hey, Vince.
Hi. Let's see. I just wanted to ask you just about how far out would you say possible, possible fossil excavations on Mars would be? Would that be like within the 20-year range? You know, if we're going to be possibly getting up there in 15 years.
Well, to do looking for fossils. I mean, unless they're exposed on the surface and you could see them through the cameras of roving vehicles, that means you're talking about a manned exploration. And there is nothing at the moment that you could predict about that. I mean, the whole of the certainly American space program has been turned on its head in the last few months. There was no obvious way that they were going to get to Mars quickly anyway with the budget that NASA had, even with the best will in the world. Now, with the focus being placed more on private space, manned space flight, and NASA focusing on breakthrough missions, maybe robotic missions, there's no way of saying. It looks like, to me, we're looking at a manned mission to Mars now at least 25 years in the future, and you would need a crew out there to actually look for fossils. So I would. It's depressing to think about, but yeah, I think you're looking at least 2035 now for a manned mission to Mars.
I've noticed some strange things from the Spirit and the Opportunity when they took some pictures of nearby things on Mars. Very weird.
Well, you know, and there's, yeah, I've seen some of these pictures too. I've seen pictures of, you know, fossils and you know, little what looked like. You know, you could imagine them to be all sorts of things. The question is, what actually are they? You know, and if you saw them from a different direction, would they still look suspicious? Would they still look like a figure sat on a rock? Or would they still look like a skull? Among all the, you know, many, many millions of rocks that those rovers have looked at, most of them look like rocks, yeah? They just look like boulders or, you know, just odd-shaped rocks. Some of them occasionally look like something interesting. The question is whether they are or not, and you've got to be very careful about that. Just because something looks like something doesn't mean it actually is. And I'd mark them off as points of interest, but I'd need to be persuaded that they are really artificial or evidence of advanced life.
Next up, we go to Alberta, Canada. Charlie on the international line. Hi, Charlie. How are you?
Hey, George. Hey, David.
Hi.
I'm doing all right. All right. I have a two-part question. One was about gravity and my question is, if the planet Earth is spinning around the sun, which is several million miles away, and the sun is spiraling around a supermassive black hole in the center of the galaxy, which is probably quadrillions of miles away, wouldn't that imply that gravity can work from an infinite distance?
Yeah, it can. That is accepted, that gravity acts over the entire distance of the universe. So your body, for example, although it is small in comparison to a planet or a star or a galaxy, actually exerts a gravitational influence on the most distant object in the universe. So that is certainly true, yeah.
And the second question was about the structure of the solar system itself. I've never really seen any good diagrams of what exactly the asteroid belt is like.
Mm-hmm.
So is it literally like a gigantic sphere of asteroids encircling the sun in like a...
The asteroid belt that is between Mars and Jupiter is a belt. It's not a... It's more like a donut or a frisbee, I guess. Well, a frisbee with a hollow in the middle, if you can imagine that. You know what I'm saying? It's not a whole sphere. It is actually a disk. When you get further out beyond Pluto, there are other regions of asteroids and comets that are spherical or more nearly spherical. But the main asteroid belt between Mars and Jupiter is a belt, so it's flat. It doesn't go all the way around the sun.
Okay, we go to Midland, Michigan now. Mike's up with us on Coast to Coast. Hey, Michael, go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, good.
Yeah, I agree with one of your earlier callers. I mean, why would the aliens, you know, stop and help us, you know? They've been observing for so long. Why don't they just continue observing us, you know, destroy ourselves?
I had
a question about Mars, really. That was just kind of a comment. Have you ever really looked into, like, the Cydonia region and the face on Mars, the Deanian Pyramid, and other anomalies? Have you really looked into the angles and stuff?
I'm not an expert. I have looked at some of the work of Mark Carlotto. He wrote a book called The Cydonia Controversy, which is the most in-depth look that I've seen of those of the belief that they are artifacts. I find it reasonably persuasive, what he's written. And I think it needs further investigation. There's certainly some very strange shapes there and alignments which have attracted my interest. The face, of course, is interesting, although closer observation makes it look a little bit less face-like. But you've got those pyramid shapes nearby as well and some interesting alignments. I'm not an expert by any means. I haven't spent months poring over those pictures and measuring them and checking that what I'm reading is correct. But I find that what Carlotta has written is quite persuasive, and I think it would certainly be a place that I'd want to send a future probe or a manned expedition, you know, just to see what it was like on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple more calls to go, David, and that'll be it. We're out of time here. Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Richard, you're up with David Darling.
How you doing? My question was for today. You were talking a little about the predator and the prey and how most creation, everything revolves around that.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking about how human beings on the natural ecosystem, you know, we really don't have anything that hunts us on a daily basis and evens out the numbers of, you know, what's alive and what's not. So do you feel that maybe, like, the Zachariah Sitchin theory might be true, like, in the sense that maybe we was altered from primates, something came in, altered a primate to give us the features we have now, and therefore maybe that the way we live, we're altering the gases in the universe, which might allow an atmosphere for another species to live in?
Well, I don't know about the second part of your question with the link up with the Sitchin theory. What I would say is that we would definitely be prey if we didn't have our technology to protect us. You know, you go swimming in shark-infested water and you'll very quickly find yourself prey. Or if you're out on the savannah without any protection, you will very quickly find yourself prey. We're certainly not very good at defending ourselves. We're not particularly strong for our size. We're not fast. We're sitting ducks, basically. We're out in the wild. It's only our civilization and our technology that's allowed us to multiply and to go virtually. We're predators on ourselves, if anything. But certainly, in our natural condition, we would be prey to many species. I don't know about the link up with the Sitchin thing. I really.
Well, that's what I meant. As far as, you know, okay, with our technology, we're able to defend ourselves within our own space, but maybe okay versus something else with better technology we couldn't. But in the sense that, okay, all natural creation has instincts that they survive off of, as to where a human has to be brought with its parents for X amount of years, and we have the brain to actually, you know, develop these technologies to to comprehend reality on a different perception as to where other creation can't do that.
I agree with you there. We are on a different level, intellectual level, and you know, our brains set us apart from all other species. My personal belief is that that has happened naturally, and I believe that the fossil record backs that up. I'm kind of conventional in that view, I guess, about how humans have evolved. We've evolved very, very quickly in the last couple of million years, but I believe I sense that that is a natural evolution. That would be my answer to that, I guess.
David, it is incredible the way science continues technologically to bring us closer and closer to some of these answers. Mm. Maybe it's just a matter of time now.
Well, I think it is. I think conventional science doesn't have the answer to everything. I mean, maybe the ultimate questions, particularly the nature of consciousness and the meaning behind the universe, is maybe something that science is blind to. But I think in terms of, you know, other life out there, and the question of maybe how the universe came about in the first place, those could be answered within our lifetime, possibly.
Okay, next up we go to Jeremy, west of the Rockies. Real quick question, Jeremy, go ahead.
Okay, great show tonight, guys. There was a show on TV about the Mayan complex had a geometry that mimicked one of the star systems, and then on Mars there was another complex or hills or something that mimicked one of the star systems. I was wondering what you thought about that.
I don't know anything about it, first of all. I can't be specific. It wouldn't surprise me if ancient civilizations did have knowledge that they acquired themselves or through contact. It wouldn't be surprising if we found archaeological remains on Mars that did the same thing. I would just have to leave it as an interesting point for now. I don't know specifically what you're talking about there. I didn't actually see the show. But those are certainly, they would fit in with conventional science, I think. I'm quite happy to believe that those are possibilities.
Absolutely. David, familiar with the work of Richard Hoagland and his work on Mars?
Oh, yes, that's right. Richard's a great guy, very imaginative guy, and he's come up with some interesting possibilities, yeah.
Absolutely. I want to thank you so much again, David, and let's not let 3 or 4 years go by next time.
Great pleasure, George. Thanks a lot.
All right, that's David Darling. We are not alone. Why we have already found extraterrestrial life. Up next, Greg Hunter joins us. What does this health insurance thing mean to all of us? He's going to try to sort through it on Coast to Coast AM.